them.
Okay, I'm sorry. For those of you who are listening online, I apologise for that. I accidentally had the microphone muted. So let me try that again. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's the lighter side of genocide because the world's so full of chaos and madness. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And as an activist who interviews, whistleblowers and people who tell me that I'm about to die through various means and forms and so on and so forth over the years, you eventually you lose that fear. You lose that motivation to be afraid because you feel like you've heard it all. And just recently, I filmed a conference at the ASB Showgrounds where my guest today, Paul Waddell, gave a presentation, and he freaked me out all over again. Paul, welcome to the program.
Very nice to be here, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, for those who are unaware, can you please tell them, the audience, what it is you do?
Okay, what I do is I test for EMF and EMR, and broadly classified as electropollution. And EMF is electromagnetic fields, which is electric fields from the electricity in the walls and your wires, and magnetic fields, mostly associated with high voltage transmission lines transmitting power. And then EMR is microwave radiation in many forms. And there's a fourth electropollutant, which is not quite so commonly known, and that's called dirty electricity, and that's high-frequency transients and the resultant harmonics, which also flow around all the power lines in your house or business or wherever you are, and can also be quite harmful.
Now, the reason why it freaked me out all over again is because of the fact that I suddenly realized, oh, my God, I'm bathing in the stuff. I mean, just if we look around, you told me that Mac computers are particularly bad, and I've got a Mac computer. You told me that being surrounded by electronic devices is not a good thing either, and I'm surrounded by them. You tell me that these new energy saver light bulbs aren't good either. Yep. And there's four of them up there that are like 10 times the size of the average of the average light bulb.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're wickedly bad, but we'll see.
Yeah. And it just occurs to me the broad implications of your work, and yep, more to the point, the lack of public awareness of what your work concerns is just absolutely staggering.
Yeah, well, one thing I'd just like to clarify for people that have got Macs, the Mac that I'm talking about, which I think is slightly dangerous, is the latest laptops. And if anybody's ever been touching one of the new or relatively new or even some of the older Mac laptops that have got a burnished or brushed aluminium top face, if you've ever felt a bit of a tingle when you've been touching these, and there are other brands also, I don't want to just have a swipe at Macs, but if you've got a laptop that's got a metal top cover where you put your hands, and especially if you've ever felt a little tingle from that's a voltage that's in there, and the most I've measured is 105 volts alternating current touching the top of a Mac, and the resultant current and we're only talking really microamps, but the resultant current that can run up your arms and across your chest muscles can be quite harmful, and this is potentially another cause of breast cancer, not just for women. Men are getting breast cancer in alarming numbers now also. But as the current runs up across your arm, across your chest, you know, the fatty tissue there, these currents can cause havoc with the cells. Okay, so voltage, and I've started making laptop earthing cords, which I have a little plug here. They're on my website, and you can, if you are concerned, you can just plugs into a USB port, and you plug it into a socket, a power socket. It's just only the earth wire, and I measured one the other day. It was a lady's laptop. It was measuring 85 volts, touching it using a body voltage tester. And plugged in the earthing lead, dropped down to 0.3 volts, which is significantly safer.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the actual dangers, how many people in this country are qualified to go and test for these types of radiation levels and so on and so forth?
I think there's probably three active people that I know of, including myself.
So there's 4 million people that are living in basically what I would akin to be a pseudo-irradiated wasteland, and there's only 3 out of the 4 million who actively make a career out of trying to expose it and help people with it. Right.
Yes, yeah, I think that's correct. And we're all three people, I'm thinking of myself included, all in the North Island too.
Which is ironic because guess where all the power gets generated for New Zealand? The South Island.
Yeah. And that's where it has to go back to, because Kirchhoff's law, when electricity is generated, it has to be returned to the point of generation. So that's where it's important that we have good infrastructure. And that takes away the big problem I have in America. It's something like in excess of 70% of the current that's used on the power lines actually goes back through the ground. And they're really finding major health problems over there with it. And it was because they discovered the problem. And the problem is to do with things like your curly light bulbs, especially the big ones there, where you generate lots of dirty electricity or these high-frequency harmonics on the power lines. It changes the balance of the power, and it creates the requirement to have a lot bigger return line. And in America, what they did, instead of increasing the size of the return line, they just pumped it straight into the ground. And so it actually returns through the earth to the point of generation. And the people that live in the path of this get incredibly sick.
Well, how sick? What are we talking about?
Oh, cancer, death. I mean.
And how long does it take?
I couldn't put a point on that, but you know the problem with this kind of pollution is that the latency period can be up to 25 years, but it can also, as it's stronger, it gets a lot quicker. I read some articles and some research where just in a matter of a couple of years, people were getting really, really ill.
Mm.
And so you know, this is we're talking about pretty serious consequences. For some of that, I don't think this is particularly endemic regarding our main electrical feeds in New Zealand, but I regularly measure dirty electricity levels up around 1,500 to 2,000 on this meter. And
1,500 to 2,000, but what's a safe level?
50. And preferably lower than 35 is optimum. And this can, like, I've got a little device in my case. I brought all my testing gear with me. I wasn't sure how much we were going to play around.
Hopefully we can play around quite a bit. Because one of the things that I found very interesting about your presentation was the fact that you do have all these pieces of technology. It's kind of like a technology detecting the damage that other technology does sort of thing.
It's for sure. But I've got a little power pack. It's a little black power pack in my case there. And if I plug that in, that will take the reading up to 2,000 or somewhere around about 2,000 GS units. The GS stands for Graham and Stetzer.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Martin Graham was the inventor of the filter that allowed them to make this meter, and Dave Stetzer is a world-recognized power quality expert, and he's commercialized the thing and tried to bring some awareness to the public. And there have been some really wonderful people like Sam Milham, who's an epidemiologist in America, who's written a book called Dirty Electricity and the Diseases of Civilization. Great book. It's an interesting little read. I got the thing on Amazon. It arrived. I sat down. I started reading it, and I didn't stop until I read the whole book. And it only took two or three hours. So it's not a big book, but it's interesting. And then there's another lady in Australia, Donna Fisher, I think it is, who's just written another book, Dirty Electricity and Electromagnetic Radiation, which is a terrific read. Really, really insightful, really good. But this is just one aspect.
Mm.
And this is the problem that I think people really struggle with is the technical nature of the problem. And so I try very hard to try and put my explanations or descriptions of this into some way that people can try and understand what I'm trying to get across. Can be difficult, though.
Mm. And have you had any opposition to your work, people accusing you of being a quack or things of that nature?
That's really, it's an interesting question. It's a funny question because there are a number of people that I know, there's a couple of people I know that are electrically sensitive, especially one lady down in Christchurch who's written some really great articles that have been published in Organics magazine. And there's also been a tireless fighter against this, and he also does a lot of geobiology work, a guy, Albino Gola. And unfortunately, Albino's pretty sick at the moment, and so he's not one of the three I counted. He would have been the fourth, but he's not sort of working at the moment. And a few other people, and I know that they have had a lot of grief from people over the years. I've been doing this for 2.5 years, I guess, and I have to say I've never actually been attacked or you know, verbally or whatever. I've never had any hassles. These people have had horrible phone calls and they've been slagged on the net, and I haven't. So I guess I'm putting myself out there a little bit more at the moment with the YouTube video and talking with you. So who knows, it may come, but there are people that are incredibly threatened by this. Their livelihood is built around this technology. The government is telling us that it's great. I think at the moment the New Zealand government's investing something like $1.5 billion into putting wireless technology into our schools and getting wireless devices for our children. Well, personally, I think that's money really poorly spent, and I think that the health bill that will eventually come out of this is possibly greater than 1.5 million, and that might sound really alarmist, but when you take children with developing bones and developing brains, I mean, boys, their brains aren't fully developed until they're about 23 or 24 or something. I was pretty crazy until I was a little bit older.
Isn't that me too?
And so, you know, and even down as low as primary schools and even childcare centres now, they're having Wi-Fi and cordless phones are really bad also. And so, you know, we're putting this technology in where there are very vulnerable members of our society, children. They can't really tell us often what's going wrong with them. They just get grumpy. It's like, I mean, I remember when my son was young, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he'd throw a bit of a fit, and you know, not a fit, but you know, he'd get all grumpy, and you know, the first thing you'd think of is, oh, is he tired, or does he need food, or does he need a drink? You know, those are the simple things. As a parent, you go, well, okay, what does he need? But you know, when you have children that come home from school with headaches, or they when they're at school, they you know, you hear of kids actually with getting heart arrhythmias and things like this from being in close contact to Wi-Fi. You know, how do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? And then, you know, the long-term effects of a generation that is going to be saturated with this stuff from the time of their birth until, you know, what comes next.
Until time immemorial.
Yeah. I see that, you know, personally, I have grave concerns for the health of our nation, the health of our people, and also for... you know, just
people in general.
Life on planet Earth.
Right. Welcome to planet Earth, ladies and gentlemen. Bathe in the rays, soak them up. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from New Zealand. And we're here today with Paul Waddell, who's one of only three people in this country who is qualified to test for electromagnetic radiation and a number of other things to do with electricity in your home. And speaking of which, considering there's only three people qualified, who qualified you?
Okay, I guess I'm unique. I think I'm the only one that has qualification from the Australian College of Environmental Studies within New Zealand. And Lady Nicole runs a terrific college there. The main courses they do are building biology, which is a complete subject, and the certificate course that I did in EMF testing is a portion of the building biology course. I didn't really, my passion and my real interest was in electropollution, so that's really all I wanted to do. I didn't want to go through and become a full building biologist. And the difference is a building biologist can consult on building materials, air quality, which is another really serious thing, molds and the whole aspect of the home and health in the home. I was a little bit affected by electropollution myself, and so I wanted to focus in on that. And that's what I've become passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two people, one has a similar kind of qualification. It's a building biology one. And the third guy, I've never met him. I just heard of him. But he's more of an electrical engineer. So, but he does test houses and things. I do know that.
Well, it'd be quite easy for you to keep motivated and keep passionate about your work, because everywhere you look, there's more work.
Well, it's true. And what I'm trying to... at that presentation at the Green Living Show, I wanted to try and highlight a couple of key points. One is that we're electric beings, and that the electricity that we surround ourselves with, the 50 cycle per second man-made alternating current in electricity, is not natural for us at all. I believe, especially from the things that I've seen and the effect that it's had on people as I've been testing people's homes, I really firmly believe that people are being quite negatively affected by this and are really not even realising it.
Here's a cell phone negatively affecting us right now.
Yeah.
All right. And that's another thing. We've got a picture of people using cell phones right on the back screen here. And you've provided me another picture here of a cell phone radiation test on the brain.
Yep.
Across a number of different age groups. So let's drag that on here and...
Sure.
And have a look. So, excuse me, it's not working too well.
Yep. So what we're looking at here is the amount of radiation that's actually penetrating into a skull, and the thing you've got to go back to is and what a lot of the mainstream people hang their head on is the SARS rating, SARS, which stands for specific absorption rate,
and so it has nothing to do with the respiratory disease.
No. No, no, not at all. No.
I know. I know.
But and how they came up with this was that when they discovered that there was this thing called radio wave sickness, which is from radio operators in the Second World War predominantly, but carried on after that, the main people that had microwave radiation were the military. And so they wanted to get some idea of how this was affecting people, and they did a lot of research into this in the 60s and 70s. And they took the average Marine, I think it was, or the average military soldier at that time, who was something like about 6 foot tall, well-built, strong, good muscular structure, and they worked out how much microwave radiation would penetrate into the skull of that typical person for the military. And this specific absorption rate is based on this military person.
Mm.
And so where we see the adult thing up there, that's a representation of what a full adult with hardened brain...
Hardened skull, rather.
That's what's going into their brain. Now, there's no appreciation for people smaller than that. Women, children, and so this picture is just sort of demonstrating a little bit about how much further the stuff goes into the brain, especially with very young children, with the bones of their skull are still very flexible and not well developed. Mm. And so you see, at a 5 year old child, you're getting
almost full brain coverage.
Full brain coverage.
It looks like about 70 to 80% brain coverage. 10 year old child, maybe about 50 or so.
and then an adult maybe about 30%.
Yep.
So regardless of your age, there's actually still quite a massive degree of penetration.
There absolutely is. And the other thing you need to be aware of is that, I sort of touched on this in my talk, is that when they do the SARS rating, they put the cell phone away from the what they call the phantom head by the manufacturer's recommendation, which is 20, 25, 30 millimetres. And by doing this, you're creating this distance, and even that will significantly make a difference to the SARS rating. And so here we are, we grab a cell phone, we hold it really close to our ear. By doing that, you've totally exceeded the SARS rating by miles. Because it's right up against your head. And every single manufacturer is in CYA. I'm sure everybody understands all that means.
I don't think they CYA.
Well, in their documentation, hidden in very small print, they all say you must keep it a certain distance away from your body at all times. This is not when you're talking on the phone.
I think it was about 20 millimetres.
20 millimetres, yeah.
So it means that in order to use your cell phone safely, according to the cell phone manufacturer, you can't touch your cell phone.
pretty much. But, hands away from critical things, but, This is really what they're saying, is that you must keep it minimum 20 millimetres away from your body all times to meet the SARS rating. Now, let's go back to what the SARS rating is. This is for a large, strong, heavily built male. You then start thinking about, well, okay, what about pregnant women, and children? And, it's a scary thing when you see a pregnant woman. I can remember, I was staying at a place one time and I walked in the door and there was this young lady who was pregnant, and I walked in, and she had a laptop sitting on a lap, and she was using it, on Wi-Fi, on the bump. She had the laptop on the bump, and she was talking on the iPhone, and it was just like, what? This is, what are you doing? Be aware.
Oh, and she's literally cooking her kid.
Yeah.
Been any studies as to how it affects a fetus?
Not that I'm aware of. No, there are very, very, very few studies about the effect
fact
on
that
children.
There hasn't been a study on that should alarm the living Shiite Muslim out of everybody.
Well, exactly, and this is where they're saying, oh, it's safe. We've done this testing. This is the SARS rating. It's safe, but there's absolutely no allowance for a smaller person and especially children. There's been almost no research done on children whatsoever. And I guess come back to this whole thing of Wi-Fi in schools. I think this is absolutely criminal, personally. We're putting children in the way of harm, and the other thing you ought to be aware of is that where you've got the routers that they put in schools, these things are industrial strength. They're not the home router, because they have to have multiple connections, and so they're really, really quite strong. And often they're put in a place where either the teacher stands very close to them, or the children are very close to them. But if people want to know more about or understand a little bit more of the issue about Wi-Fi in schools, there's a really, really good website called wifiinschools.org.com.au, I think it is. It's an Australian website. If you care about your children and there's Wi-Fi in the schools, please get educated. Go and find this website. Just do a search for Wi-Fi in Schools Australia. We also have we've got a few websites in New Zealand. There's one, Ban the Tower, which talks a little bit about this kind of stuff. But it's
I seen a couple of pictures online of these giant Wi-Fi towers, literally in the schoolyard.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, look, as far as I'm concerned, the modern design for a jungle gym has just gone downhill. Downhill.
You can't. I mean, they're towers. You can't really swing off them.
What are they supposed to do? Use it for a fracking climbing frame?
Yeah. Well, not really. At that presentation I was giving last weekend, one of the ladies sort of asked me about a Montessori preschool, And I know this one really well because it's right up the road from me. And if we can get a little bit of technology working later on, I can graphically show you the microwave radiation levels around that preschool. They're kind of interesting to see. And when you see it like that, it's a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about it, but I think when you can actually see what's happening, it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of what actually got you motivated into researching and becoming qualified in this area in the first place? Were you like looking at your kids and wondering what the heck was wrong with them, found out, and then go, man, this is a really important issue. I've got to go and make this my life.
It started way more than 20 years ago. And my wife and I were living in Adelaide, and this is BK before kid. Mm-hmm. And We did a course with these really interesting people, and it was about earth energies and dowsing for chi and houses and things. And the upshot of that was we found that this new flat that we'd just moved into, we actually had an underground stream running under the bed, and that was why we were sleeping really poorly, which is the whole geopathic stress, which is another thing that I do, but a whole different subject. But that kind of got me interested in the possibility of this. And then we moved back to Auckland, and we're introduced to Albino Gola, and we got him to come and check out a house we were living in. We had a lovely old villa in Mount Eden, and then we bought a new, this is a little bit of an involved story, but anyway, we bought a brand new townhouse in St Heliers and moved in, and the first couple of nights I slept very poorly. And so then I went away on business and slept better, and which is normally the opposite. I'd normally sleep worse when I travel. But so I rang up my wife and said, look, can you please phone up Bino and ask him to come and have a look at the place? And the upshot was that the main circuit board for the house was downstairs and across a little bit, and all of the main trunking of the cabling for the rest of the house was coming up by the bed, and we had quite a high body voltage reading, which is an electric field measurement, on the bed. And so I'm a little bit sensitive to electric fields and body voltage. And so for the next 9 years we lived at that house, every night before going to sleep, I'd go down and I'd turn off almost all of the circuit breakers in the house. And doing this, shut off the circuits, cut the electrical supply, dropped the electric fields, I was fine. We then, say 9 years later, we moved to a new house, and it's amazing how you repeat your mistakes. Sure enough, this new place had really, really nice geopathic stress, but when we moved in, I didn't check at the time, I realised that the bloody meter board or the circuit board was directly below the bed again. And so over the next period of time, I learned a little bit more about what you can do to remediate this stuff. We put in demand switches, which are switches that are mounted at the circuit board, which automatically shut off the power to a circuit when there's no demand, like if it's on a lighting circuit. If all the lights are turned off, the demand switch says, okay, there's no current flow here, I'll switch off at the circuit board. So that whole circuit just drops. The minute you turn a light switch on, it senses the change in requirement and it livens up the whole circuit. It sends a non-biologically active small DC voltage around the circuit.
Mm.
Just waiting for the switch to come on. So,
and there's no like delay or anything like that. Like you wouldn't be getting
half a second delay when you flick the switch. It's
so you're not going to be like getting up in the middle of the night and accidentally fall down the stairs because the lights don't work.
No, exactly. And that's the beauty of these things is that they're completely automatic. And so yeah, we installed demand switches. We moved the circuit board out into the garage. We did a big renovation on the house, and I got the voltage was something like 14 volts. And we got it down to about 2 volts, which is still high. For me now, when I'm testing that, that's still a reasonably high reading on a bed. But for the 10 odd years that we lived there, it was okay. But I just felt like gradually over a period of time, my vitality was diminishing. It wasn't just that I was getting older. And then my wife decided it was time to get a new mattress. And so we went off shopping and bought a new mattress We bought one that had metal coils in it, had pocket springs, and sure enough, I couldn't sleep on it. It was the metal in the mattress was enough that it created a strong enough field that I couldn't actually sleep well on it.
Mm.
So, and at that point, this is about 3 years ago, at that point, that's when I said, I really want to understand what's going on here. I started doing a lot of research, read a lot of books, and then I found, and I sort of remembered back to my meetings with albino gola 20-odd years prior. And even back then, my wife had actually said to me, I could see you doing this in the future. I now have the time to put into doing this. And so I went to the college in Australia, did the studies, got my certificate, and have invested in some very, very good testing equipment.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You don't want to miss this, because coming up next, we're going to be using Google Earth and showing you a little bit of mapping there, as well as breaking out some of the gadgets and the very scary, intimidating sounds that they make. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously irradiated wee capital of Auckland here. Now, on the screen behind us, Paul, if you just want to fling it around there, what exactly are we looking at? And, of course, we're going to have to describe it visually as well for the radio listeners.
Sure, okay. What we're looking at is we had this lady talking to us about this Montessori preschool, and she was saying, you know, what are the levels going to be like? And they were told that being inside the building, which has all these towers on top of it, would be a lot safer because they were underneath the towers. And I kind of dispelled that myth a little bit, I think, because I think it will still be quite strong. So what we're looking at here is this is a Google Earth map, and the you see these spikes in a sort of a pinky color poking up in the air, and the ones to the right hand side. That's the reading as I drove along the road outside that Montessori preschool. And I would think that those readings were up around the major peaks would be about 20,000 microwatts, I think. And then as we travel a little bit further along the road, we come past another cell phone tower. And that one was really tall. That peak would be 30,000 microwatts or excess. And so you can kind of, when you're looking at this, you can actually see the range of spread of the cell phone towers where you get the major effect. Like we're looking at 200 to 300 to 400 meters spread where you're getting significantly higher readings. And then it does drop down to quite low levels in between the towers. But you know, as you know, you can be in between towers and you can still get good cell phone reception. The problem is that the people that live near the towers are getting really, really heavily irradiated. You know, they're getting lots and lots of microwave radiation. Easily homes can have 10, 15,000 microwatts beaming into them if they're within 100, 150 meters of a cell phone tower. And what I find is if you can actually see the tower, like if you can look out a window and see a tower, that's generally not good.
Just in general, right?
In general, and very, very, very general. And like in Auckland here, if you can look out a window and you can see Sky Tower, then you'll have reasonably high, you know, slightly higher readings than people that can't.
You can see the Sky Tower from practically everywhere in the city. It's like the largest phallic symbol in the country. It's the largest phallic symbol in the Southern Hemisphere.
True, but there's a lot of places where you can't directly see it line of sight. Like through a window or from your house, and yeah. A lot of places you can't. But I was testing a house over the Harbour Bridge in the North Shore, and I walked into the house, and it was had a beautiful view out across the harbour towards Auckland City. And I walked into the lounge, looked across, there was Sky Tower, and I knew that I would get a reasonably good reading in that room.
Mm.
And sure enough, you know, it was 600, 700, 800 microwatts sort of thing.
For frack's sake.
Yeah.
And so this is basically the at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you are or what you do. You're bathing in this stuff, and really the only thing that you can control to any degree is your own home. And is it expensive to purchase the technology? Like you were talking about those sensitivity switches before.
The whole different thing. Demand switches are for electric fields.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, off electrical wiring. If we're talking just about microwave radiation, it is very expensive to shield from microwave radiation. Definitely, the...
I mean, what are you going to do? Buy a lead vest?
Lead doesn't cut it.
Oh, for frack's sake.
No, lead doesn't cut it. Things that reflect are better, like tinfoil. And this is where this whole joke about tinfoil hats comes in, actually work. But there are issues about wearing a tinfoil hat.
Well, see, what I was thinking about is designing a range of caps that have the inside of the cap...
Oh, I've got one.
Actually lined with tinfoil.
Well, not tinfoil, but I've actually got a cap that's got shielding material in it. But I don't really think it works, actually.
Really?
No, not so much.
No, not done any testing on it or anything?
No, well, the problem is that you have a full body exposure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it's...
Well, at least you reduce the amount of effect on your brain, which is really the more important part, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess, but your whole body is reacting at a cellular level. Mm. It's your whole body that reacts to this stuff. It's not just your brain. And when you're holding a cell phone up to your head, you're getting this heating effect. You're getting the microwave effect inside your brain. And it's just like, I mean, one analogy I give people sometimes is like, I don't know if you've ever pulled something out of the fridge that's really cold and you've put it in the microwave to warm it up. And you haven't nuked it for long enough, and you pull it out, and it's still cold on the outside, but it's really hot on the inside. And and if you poke around in there, you'll find that there are actually little localized hot spots. And this, I think, is one of the problems with inside our brains, is that by the time we feel it being warm at our ear, because you know, whenever you use a cell phone or a cordless phone, which is possibly even worse, you know, this microwave radiation, by the time you're feeling it at your ear or outer skin or outer part of your head, there could be really localized hotspots within inside your brain which are really, really cooking. You could have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or more degrees of heat inside your brain because, you know, the brain is the kind of tissue that likes to be heated up by microwaves. It's a fatty tissue, I think, and you know, fats and fluids are flat fats and water are what the microwave radiation vibrates intensely.
I was trying to get a sandwich from Subway the other day, and I asked him, "Is there anything here that I can have that's warm that isn't microwaved?" And they used to have the the teriyaki chicken and meatballs, but now they microwave the teriyaki chicken as well, and the only thing you got there is the meatballs, which I think they probably initially heat up by microwaving it anyway and then just keeping it in a warming tray.
Yeah.
All of these other things. So not only are we saturated by microwave radiation, electrical signals and things of this nature, but our food's contaminated by it as well.
Yeah, I saw a documentary a little while ago. It was produced in Germany, and it was about microwave ovens. And I think if you'd watched that video, you'd never ever use a microwave oven again.
We got rid of ours a while ago, and in fact, a couple came over. We sold it on Trade Me, right? And a couple came over, and they just had a newborn, and I said to them, "Do not." Under any fracking circumstances, I mean, I wouldn't recommend using the microwave in the first place, and I told them how Russia had made them illegal in the 70s due to a public health risk,
yep.
And told them do not, under any circumstances, microwave the baby's formula or anything like that, you know, keep it away from your child. But it takes like 7 people to say the exact same thing to you before it sinks in generally.
Yep, I mean, I used to be a marketing manager, and that's one of the rules of marketing, direct mail. Mm. You need to hit people at least 7 times before they even begin to register generally. But, you know, let's not get into that. But, you know, coming back to this whole microwave thing, it's like there are things that you can do. You know, like, for instance, at my home, I purposefully selected the house that it was not on any of the main, particularly main roads. And so my house is equidistant to all of the towers around me. And like, okay, they could put one up on the street outside my house, but in the location it is, it's residential, it's relatively unlikely. Mm. So you can select where you live or get somebody like me to come and check to make sure that, because I'm starting to do a lot more pre-purchase inspection stuff, which I think is terrific that people are caring enough about their health that they want and that they understand that where they live is so important. So, you know, there's things that you can do that. I know, like in our bedroom, it's less than 10 microwatts in our bedroom, which is pretty good in a residential area. Okay, so you can look closely at where you're going to put your house. There are websites. There's a website where you can go and look and see where all the towers are. I can't remember the address. It's a Dropbox file. But
one thing that I also found interesting, I had a conversation with an activist in Wellington, and he refused to come on the show. He's too afraid. Because what he was doing is he was standing up against these cell phone tower companies who swoop in literally overnight.
Mm.
And generally when they wait until the residents are gone away on holiday or something like that, so that they can't be stopped in mid-process, and at least this is what he's been telling me, and then all of a sudden there's a cell phone tower right in your front yard and you haven't even been told about it until it's frickin' there.
Yep, I mean, that whole process, they do it very clandestinely because they know that people are going to object. Under the Resource Management Act, if they put it on council land, they only have to get council approval, and council does not have to notify the residents. And the other thing which is really interesting is that you are not, by law, you are not allowed to object to the placement of a cell phone tower on the basis of health. It's actually written into the Resource Management Act that you cannot. And so it just defies logic. I'm in communication with some people in Australia, some building biologists over there, and there are really funny sort of things happening over there. There's a proposed cell phone tower to go next to a Steiner school, and these people are really, really hopefully quite aware of what's going on, and so the parents are starting to get up in arms about the cell phone tower and everything. But, you know, the crazy thing is that if they can find an endangered insect or animal, they've got far better chance of stopping that cell phone tower.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me get this straight. If it endangers a cryptic species, that's bad. If it endangers humans, that's good.
Especially children.
Especially children.
Especially children. And I mean, this is how bizarre the legislation is that, you know, if you can, and so they're frantically looking around to see if there's any species.
Come on, kids, get in the garden, look for them bugs.
but it's real. The authorities will pay more attention to that than they will to the health of humans. It's just, and especially children.
Well, considering the Ministry of Health, according to the Ministry of Health, is the third leading cause of death in New Zealand.
Yeah.
That does not surprise me in the least.
No.
If anything, governments are, supposed to look out for people. And just like most things in life, whatever its stated intention is, it's actually the direct opposite. So if they're there to protect you, they're actually there to frickin' kill you. So...
Well, I don't know if I go quite that far,
I'll go that far. You don't have to, we're not going to damage your credibility. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastonshow.com. Cool.